These are the Target Files. Journey back with us between the 1970s and 1990s on a TARDIS nostalgia trip as we look back at the novelizations and audiobook releases of classic Doctor Who stories. Gallifreyan archive accessed. Subject, Time Lord known as the Doctor. Sixth incarnation. Adventure title, Vengeance on Varos. Year of publication, Earth Sol 3, 1988. Author, Philip Martin. The TARDIS has stalled in mid-flight, and it is only on the planet Varos that the Doctor can find his precious Zyton 7, all he needs to continue his travels through time and space. Arriving on the planet, he saves the rebel Jondar from execution and incurs the wrath of Syl, the sadistic representative of the Galatron Mining Corporation on Varos. Hello, welcome to Doctor Who Target Files, and this edition we are discussing the sixth Doctor story novelisation of Vengeance on Varos, adapted from his own TV screenplay by Philip Martin. Hello, this is Mike from Swansea.
And hello, this is Alex from Exeter. So, what did you think of it, Mike?
Quite an interesting book, really, Al. I think we reviewed it elsewhere a few years ago on a different podcast. Yeah, very interesting story. Huge parallels with the way the world is going, the whole idea of media manipulation at the moment, and the relationship between state and media, and all the various players within. Did enjoy it this time. Perhaps I've developed a few minor criticisms of it, because I recall we loved it before. Yeah, it's very interesting, and we're also looking at the audiobook today, which hasn't had an official BBC release, apart from an abridged version back in the 90s, which has recently been re-released on a Tales from the TARDIS Volume 2 box set. So those are my initial thoughts, Al. What did you make of Vengeance on Varos?
Yeah, I enjoyed it again, because I enjoyed it the first time we reviewed it. It's got a lot of parallels, I think, to how the world is now. Obviously, it must have been back then, the whole, you know, capitalism, you know, how things can be altered and manipulated by, you know, the public, and fear of control. And I thought, you know, sort of, I did feel a sort of feelings of sort of how the Nazis worked and how, you know, you're controlled by your society, really. I really enjoyed it, to be honest.
Yes, mentioning Nazis, Al, that's the big fear of the way the world is going now, isn't it, in terms of how basically words are manipulated nowadays by the various politicians we unfortunately see in positions of power around the world.
Oh, most definitely. I know we are in a very interesting time, and it's sort of how even the politicians are sort of backlashing against the whole media at the moment we've got, you know, happening in America. And I think this book sort of represents that, you know, the whole state is controlled by what they see, and then they vote the person, but they don't really control it. And it's all sort of down to the mineral, what the whole planet is there for, really.
Yes, I mean, I had a look at a bit of the history. This story has been released on DVD twice. There was a special edition I watched with a special making-of documentary. Philip Martin, the author, spoke in that. Really established writer when he got the job writing this for Doctor Who. He had a few ideas. He actually made a TV series called Gangsters back in the 70s, which he filmed in Pakistan. And he noticed around that time that the TV studios were surrounded by tanks. So that sort of put the seed in his head, the idea of the state and how it controls TV, and that definitely comes across in the story, Al, doesn't it? How it controls the media.
Oh, most definitely. The state controls everything, and I'm not surprised that affects him. Also, I think things like, you know, George Orwell's 1984, a big sort of background to this. And, you know, without knowing it, you know, these days we are completely controlling Facebook and Twitter and all sort of things we can't live without with now. And there's sort of subtle influences. I think it's one of those stories you could definitely sort of semi-do now. I think was slightly done in the first, you know, Chris Eccleston season.
Yeah, taking it down to the sort of level of the characters, Al, you've just mentioned Twitter, social media. Two people who are almost seen as ourselves, aren't they? Is it Arak and Etta?
Oh, yeah, they're definitely the people you would think most of. And I think it's quite interesting the way that the person you see, I just can't remember his name now, he's being tortured from the beginning, and he sort of, everybody hates him. He's really a freedom fighter, really.
That's John Dar, isn't it? Played by... Played on TV by Jason Connery, son of Sean, of course. His very first TV role, apparently, back in the 80s, before he became Robin of Sherwood in the latest series of that show. Arak and Etta, the two characters, watching events unfold, they represent the old version of how we'd all discuss TV at home, which we see nowadays in a show like Gogglebox, which has become more of an extreme issue in the world, I think, with social media. You know, we all follow TV series now. We all type along on Facebook, Twitter, various forums, don't we? TV shows are going out and you get that instant reaction nowadays, and sometimes it's not as sort of edited as it could be. You know, people are often very honest on Twitter to their own detriment at times, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, I think today we spend our lives looking at screens and that. And then Twitter can be sort of a double-edged sword because, you know, it can exactly say what people think about people. And, you know, it's interesting to see what there is a slight backlash these days. People try and have less screen time. But I definitely think we have the people who are against this. And I personally think that when you sit down and watch something, you know, you interact, you get much better effect than you do watching people, your friends on Twitter and Facebook.
Absolutely, yeah. I know there are advantages and disadvantages to it. I believe, anyway.
As you know, I'm an avid Facebook and Twitter. I Facebook everything, you know what I'm doing. And I think it is a good thing because it allows you to get in contact and find people you've probably not spoken to. Or Twitter allows you to find out about groups and bands. You know, I would miss lots of gigs I've been to the last 3 to 4 years. But I can see where it could also be a sort of manipulation. You can see that at the beginning of this book where, you know, the public are being made to vote, or as they don't eat, they're starved. And it's sort of manipulation on all forms, really.
Yeah, the way that word has been hijacked now, isn't it, in the modern political era. Alternative, they say. Alternative fact. Oh, I don't like the way it's going, Al.
I know, we have to be very, you know, non-political in this, but, you know, there's so many elements of, you know, how Trumpism, what I see in this book, and, you know, and you get other people like Blair coming out today and trying to get part of Cherry, really, and it just annoys me, really.
That's my little alarm for mentioning our politicians' names, Al. So, you did it twice. Don't worry.
edit out.
Yes, if we continue to talk a little bit about the characters, you've mentioned Arak and Etta as the two watchers. They could be a mirror of us at home watching the story. But what did you make of the likes of the governor and the higher ups in this story?
Well, I don't know, because they sort of turn themselves into very caricatures of, you know, governors and the high-ups all out for themselves, and they basically affect, you know, the way the plot goes, which is a good thing, but they're sort of very stereotype people, like the governor's got the power. But I think the way that you bring in the whole mind control is also a very interesting one. I do like the character of Seals.
Yes, on to him, the great profiteer. Capitalist who wants to be a politician. Remind you of anybody, Al?
You told me not to mention names. So I
no, just mention don't names. Mention the names. I'm just saying, remind you of anybody.
Where do we start? You know, capitalism at the moment is sort of... He reminds me a lot of Piers Morgan and...
Yes, well, we can mention him. He's not a politician. He's just...
No, I can mention Piers Morgan. Just, you know,
a blowhard, sort of, I think, is the word.
That's not the word I use, but yeah. I don't mean... It's just sort of... That sort of definite, great... horrible character, and to be like a ginormous sort of sluggy character was a great idea, I think, because he's just there for the money, and, you know, you'll probably pronounce his name better, but the guy who voices him is just fantastic.
Oh, Nabil Shaban is...
Nabil Shaban. When he came up, that laugh and everything, just that's so creepy.
There's a really interesting story, actually, because he had a friend who had a pet snake, and he decided to bring that very famous noise in by trying to imagine what the snake would sound like laughing. And I think that just sums up superbly, doesn't it? The whole...
it's so creepy. And I think Colin Baker does a good performance of that, actually.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
He's still friends with Nils. I think it's a really good performance. But I see where... I think it's a very good allegory for capitalism, that the whole... You know, he's there sort of going mental. His shares go up and down. And all he's there for is viewing figures. So I think he's great. I think we've all met people like Seelwolf.
Yes, he's really pulling the strings, isn't it? Because you have all these layers of government, like the governor, and they are more or less as manipulated as the regular workers, like Arik Arneta, aren't they?
Well, definitely, on a different sort of outlet. Like, he is still manipulated, because he's manipulated by Silk, and he's manipulated by everybody around him. Not as much manipulation as the lower characters. They're manipulated by, we'll be killed, we won't have any food. But I think it's a very interesting role he plays.
But it's also little elements of creating division, isn't there? You know, there's the whole shocking scene, really, of Etta and Arik, the couple, where the lady threatens to sort of tell on him, doesn't she? She threatens to expose him for refusing to vote at one point. You know, that's quite a spine-chilling moment, isn't it?
Oh, definitely, definitely. You know, that whole, you know, if you, you know, I that's why I always think of sort of, you know, spying on your neighbours when you hear that scene. Thought, well, I will tell on you. And he's not joking at him. He's meaning it. And it does feel very creepy, that bit.
Yeah, wonderful performance. Actress's name was Sheeda Reed, and she returned in Doctor Who playing Clara's grandmother in the regeneration story for Matt Smith.
Oh, really? Is that the same actress? Because I always thought she was brilliant as Clara's grandmother.
Yeah, Sheeda Reed, this very, very, very same actress it was. Yeah, I just want to talk. There was a bit of controversy at the time, and it's also within this novelisation now, about the violence within the story. There's an acid bath scene.
Yes, there's the famous acid bath scene, which, when Colin works out, doesn't work it out as thinking it's that violent. I don't know, because I think, violently, it's not that violent, in my opinion, but, you know, people at the time would have thought that whole, you know, throwing people into acid baths and trippy scenes with the monsters, it was quite violent.
Well, interestingly enough, Philip Martin enhances and elaborates on this in the book.
Oh, definitely. It's more violent in the book than the TV programme.
There's a little bit of cunning put into the Doctor, you know, the way Philip Martin words it very cleverly. It's almost as if the Doctor does plan to push the man in the acid bath, whereas on screen, Colin is trying to pull the guy back, and then the other guy who falls in the acid bath pulls his colleague in.
Yeah, I know. Well, on screen, it, you know, it's like Colin's trying to save him. And I think it's just an acid bath there. Mary White has had a meltdown.
Sarcasm as well in the TV version doesn't help matters, I don't think, in terms of Colin's Doctor turning around and saying, I don't think I'll join you.
I know. I think that in some way makes it less, you know, violent and frightening. That adds humour. But, you know, at the time, they probably thought, oh, you can't throw people into acid baths.
A little bit of the James Bond pun there, isn't it? James Bond style pun.
Yeah, I think, yeah, James Bond, before it went deeply serious like we've got at the moment, which is always better.
How did you feel about the idea of the mineral they need, which suddenly seems to conveniently run out in the TARDIS just as they come to Varos Zyton 7? It's a bit of a MacGuffin just to get them there.
It's a good plot device to get them there, but it is a little bit sort of fissionated. They're sort of thinking, well, how can we get the Varos? Oh, well, I bet the TARDIS falls a bit like it always does. It's sort of... must have been all one of those meetings round drinks where they're thinking, well, we've got to get to the, you know, we've got a planet plot, we've got a prison plot, how do we put it all together?
Yes, Al, and in terms of the pace of the novel, there seems to be a fair deal of running around corridors. Do you think that sort of adds to what it could be quite a plodding pace previously? At times it does stretch credibility a little bit.
I think it's interesting, because I think obviously you have to fill episodes with lots of running around corridors and that, but it does feel like if you took that out, it would be very dry. You'd probably just have point scenes between the Doctor and the, you know, the governors and Sill. Well, I think in a way that could have been okay, really.
Original cover, published 16th of June 1988. David McAllister's the artist. I don't remember him doing many Target books.
I don't think he did a few.
No Doctor on the cover, which can always be a bit of an issue. We do have a light blue background, the symbol of Varos. Syl is very prominent, as are two of the guards.
Interesting. Just having Syl on there, because But is this through the time with the whole rights issue of Doctor photos? So
no, it's moved on from photos at this point. I think Colin Baker himself perhaps had an issue in terms of payment, didn't he?
I think so. Well, it's fine. I think that's an interesting one, because Silv is very important to the story. So I think that's an interesting one.
Yeah, it is certainly memorable. And they brought out a few more later on. 1993 Target Edition. Our old friend Alistair Pearson.
Ah, that'd be a good one then.
Yeah, it has the Sylvester McCoy logo, which they all seemed to have at that time.
I think the reason for that is that was the logo at the time people were sort of familiar with, weren't they?
Yes, the Black Starfield banner. Vengeance on Varos in white. A sort of prison motif. Colin in his full outfit in a prison behind bars. Sylv, sorry.
Yeah.
Sylv next to him on the other side. That's an interesting one. Philip Martin.
That's quite a good one. That sort of says everything, really.
In white. And then we had a re-released edition, 2013, 50th anniversary. Sorry, last year, sorry, 2016.
Oh, yeah.
Colin Baker in pencil drawn, really, pencil sketched in. A red sort of Mars-like sky background.
Oh, yeah.
Sylv penciled in very green. One of the guards with the famous helmets. And the governor towards the far side within the torture chair. So, yeah, they're all very interesting. I'd say there's a pretty even spread.
There's a good sort of spectrum. I think, again, I like the Andrew Pearce one most.
I'd say it's pretty even for me, an even spread between the three for me. I can't actually find out who did the cover for last year's reprint. If anybody could let us know, folks. Yes, if you could let us know at DW Target Files or Facebook, check for the Doctor Who Target Files. So yeah, pretty decent coverall. This hasn't actually had an official audiobook release, BBC Audio, yet, but we'll be discussing the abridged one in a moment.
This is Alex Gibbons' Doctor Who News Round.
Hello there, this is Alex, and this is Who's News on the 17th of February. First thing to mention is we've had quite a fun video launch on the Doctor Who Facebook page with Michelle Gomez painting something. She didn't say exactly what, but it looked like the TARDIS, and it looked like that she said she'd be coming out of it later. So I can expect that Missy is coming back for season 10. It's bound to be at some point later in the year, as they haven't said which of the two-part episodes she's going to be in. It's also been launched this week that Stephen Moffat, in an interview, is not going to write any more Doctor Who. He feels that, one, that he's done enough episodes, and two, that he wants Chris Chibnall to have his own stamp on the whole thing. He is planning other ways to do different things with Mark Gatiss still. Big Finish news now. BigFinish.com does have quite a few things coming out this week. We have, first, the Eternal Battle, new Fourth Doctor Tom Baker, with Romana, played by Lara Ward, and also K-9. The Doctor lands on a planet and is involved with the Zontarans. It's meant to be very good from what I've heard. It's getting good reviews. Next from Big Finish is the Fifth Doctor, Peter Davison. It's the Contingency Club. Nyssa, played by Sarah Sutton. Matthew Waterhouse back as Adric and Tegan Fielding. And that's set as Victorian times at a gentleman's club. What could be going on there? Also getting good reviews. Well, if you want something really well worth listening to, so I was just thinking of watching as I saw a trailer for his latest film at the cinema today. It is John Hurt as the Invisible Man. Big Finish have several projects still to come out from him. This is the Big Finish classic H.C. Wells version of The Invisible Man. Looks and sounds fantastic. I've been listening to the trailer a lot and it's well worth a buy. Also coming out slightly later than planned due to John's unfortunate death is box set 4 of The War Doctor, which also involves Lou Jameson as Leela. Looks rather good.
Okay, Al, moving on to the audiobook release of Vengeance on Varos, not officially released in its full audiobook form yet by BBC Audiobook, but it was released in an abridged format back in 1997, re-released at the end of last year, 2016, on a CD and MP3 download called Tales from the TARDIS Volume 2, read by Colin Baker. What do you make of this abridged version, Al?
Yeah, it's very enjoyable. It's a good-paced story, thanks to Colin's reading, and it has good sort of background noises and effects. It's not bad. Norman Niggles with Colin, he's not very good at doing Nicola Bryant's voice, unfortunately, but all the rest of it is very, very good, and it's well worth a listen.
The abridged version lends a lot of style and scope to it. It mirrors the TV show, which had gone to 45 minutes in the format back in 1985. It was first broadcast, so we get two episodes, 45 minutes long. Goes along at a nice old pace, misses out a few key elements that didn't make it into the original novelised version, but don't really take anything away from the story. Colin's voice of Nicola, a little bit strained at times, a little bit... I struggled with it. A little more than a whiny American at times, really, wasn't it, Al?
Yeah, it does go very whiny at some points, and sort of lets down how good Perry is, really, in this story. He does play quite an important part, and I think it's a bit whiny, but I think it's just that Colin can't quite get it. It's a surprise, because he's worked an awful lot with Nicola, so it's a little bit of a letdown. Otherwise, it's quite good, I thought.
Yes, but he does revel a lot in terms of the character of Syl, doesn't he? He really loves that sort of maniacal laugh we mentioned with the special reptilian sort of la 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 tongue roll.
He really gets Syl done really well. I think he's heard his voice a lot, and he's worked with him twice since in the last years, so he knows it quite well. Yeah, I think it really comes over well, that Syl menacing bit.
So a very good effort audiobook overall. I'd recommend the purchase, Al, on the Tales from the TARDIS Volume 2 set, and it would be interesting to see perhaps Colin or Martin Jarvis read the full version at some point in the future.
Yeah, it would be good, because, you know, both of them are fantastic. It'd be interesting to get their perspectives from both being in it, so it'd be great.
So, Alex, final thoughts on Vengeance of Varos, the novelisation, and the audiobook, and your score.
Well, I think the book is very interesting. It does lack a little bit and can get a bit long sometimes. Otherwise, I thought the issues that are put out in it and how it's quite relevant still to what's happening today. Audiobook-wise, as I said just a minute ago, I think it's a very good read audiobook by Colin. It has, you know, good pace. It does keep you interested. It's always a good thing. I don't think it's as good as the one we reviewed last week, to be unfortunate, because that was something really special. Overall, I think I'd give the book maybe a 7 and the audiobook maybe an 8.
Pretty similar to what I thought, really, Al. Goes along at a decent pace. The abridged version worked. I'd love to hear a bit more in an official BBC audiobook release. I presume they're selling pretty well, because there seems to be one out more or less every month this year, doesn't there?
Yeah, they do seem to be doing well. I think it's just because, you know, they do have a good idea on sound effects and background now, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. The editing top-notch for back in the day in the 90s. Colin has a very sort of soothing and voice, and he manages to get different experiences into most of the characters, different emphasis on their voices. Enjoyed the narrative, enjoyed the TV story, enjoyed this. The ending perhaps a little bit rushed, quite horrific at times in terms of the manipulation coming to an ultimate end after all these trials throughout the book, isn't it? You know, and in terms of letting people think they've escaped into something which is far more horrific than the trials they've gone through throughout the story. And then ending on that wonderful note of Arrak and Etta. Finally, the whole issue of reality TV in this context is turned off, and it does leave you wondering, doesn't it, what would we do in the world without reality TV?
Well, I think we'd be better off, really. I've never seen the concept of reality TV personally, but that's just me. But I agree, it does have a really nice ending with that sort of whole couple working out that what they had before was better than what they had under their corruption and sort of being controlled, really.
Yeah, you know, sort of reminiscent or taken on even further in the movie, you know, with Jim Carrey, The Truman Show, where you have the guys in the gas station at the end. They just change the channel, don't they, when he finally escapes the world he's lived in, which is an entirely fictional reality.
And yeah, that's a rather good film, I have to admit. I was thinking of the whole Truman thing. It's the whole, maybe it's like Groundhog Day as well, where you have sort of the same thing happening to you, and by the end of it, you don't know if you're coming or going, really.
But yeah, in terms of politicising it, you know, we've got a reality TV star in the White House now. That's the frightening thing. We saw I've got political again. It's all right.
God knows how that happened. What, you know.
And we'll never call him the governor.
Yes, that's you in Russia.
That's another another thing to put in Colin's great description of Cyril's voice, isn't it?
Oh yeah, he knows that voice really well, and it was great. I do like that performance of Cyril.
I'm only pressing that button again because I have digressed. I haven't given my score. Same as yours, Al, I think, exactly the same this week. A 7 for the novelisation, an 8 for the audiobook. Yeah, a pretty enjoyable one, not the best Target book we've reviewed.
No, it's enjoyable, which is always a good thing.
But hunt it down, folks, you know, probably one of Colin Baker-era's better stories.
Yeah, definitely, it's well worth a read, Al. Unfortunately, Colin Baker's stories are a bit scarce, so we need more audiobooks, we need more books, so...
Next time on the Target Files, we will be discussing Doctor Who, Paradise Towers, written by Stephen Wyatt, along with the BBC audiobook release, read by Bonnie Langford. Doctor Who Target Files, Vengeance on Varos review, featured Alexander Gibbons and Michael Winks. I Am the Doctor, originally composed by Murray Gold. Version for the podcast by YouTube user GruelingTerror42. Check out their channel. Vengeance on Varos incidental music, originally composed by Jonathan Gibbs. Newsround opening and closing theme, originally composed by Ted Heath and his orchestra, and John Baker. No copyright infringement intended on any of the music used in this podcast. Doctor Who Target Files, Vengeance on Varos review, was recorded in Swansea, South Wales, and Exeter, Devon, UK, during February 2017.